Well, I might say, as far as the Indian Reorganization Act is concerned, I think this is possibly one of the best intentioned but unfortunate happenings that could have possibly taken place as far as the Indian people are concerned. What I'm speaking about is that although it did stop the sale of Indian lands and did stop the allotment system, created a socialistic society and set the Indian people apart from the mainstream of American life and made them a problem. So what this has really done, it has substituted in place of the governing system that the Indians had prior to the Indian Reorganization Act, a white man's idea of how they should live, rather a paternalistic type of government, which had as its object the socializing of all the activities of the Indian people. And while the framers of this act and the ones who were responsible for the idea of formulating it probably had the best intentions in the world, I cannot help but think that there was maybe not an overt conspiracy, but one in the back of the mind of these bureaucrats to really perpetuate their own existence.
The bureaucrats in the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
Right. Now, when I speak of bureaucrats, I not only include the actual office holders, but the families and friends of all these office holders who form the controlling and guiding memberships of these Eastern Indian organizations. But to make myself a little clearer, I want to elaborate a little on the effects of the Indian Reorganization Act insofar as it has deterred the development and the independent thinking of the Indian people. In the first place, it set the Indian aside as a problem. The Indian was told that he was a problem from the very day that he was born under this system. And as he grew older, he was, by the presence of these so-called experts in agriculture and ranching and other activities they were paying lip service to teaching the Indians, he was somehow made to feel that he was inferior, that he wasn't able to compete. So that the whole system emphasized the activities of the Indians as a whole for the benefit of the whole rather than the individual private enterprise system of our American system. He wasn't taught to be a capitalist, which he must be taught in order for him to survive in this country. Many of the programs had limitations on them, particularly, say, the cattle program. They would allow an Indian to acquire some 200 head of cattle, and he couldn't get any more. I forget the exact figures, but there were limitations put on him so that he was appeared as though that any programs that were instituted were not aimed at benefiting the Indian, but where some side effects did benefit him, it was probably an unfortunate occurrence because their main objective was to show what they've been doing to members of Congress on the Appropriations Committee to justify the millions of dollars they were spending, when actually the Indian was getting little or no benefit from any of this. And I think the main thing that was wrong with the whole thing was that the setting of the Indian aside on a different place in the state, designating him as a problem, making him feel he was a problem, beating down rebels, beating down Indians who expressed any independent thinking, rewarding collaborators, rewarding them with positions of importance, and completely stifling independent and creative thinking from the Indian people. Having different laws apply to him, setting up a different kind of government. In other words, he wasn't under the same kind of government that his white neighbors were. Rather, what this Indian Reorganization Act should have done, it should have set up a county system exactly like the neighboring counties. with county officials, with municipal officials, with Indians going about their daily political and economic activities in the same way that other people in the state are, so that they could benefit from the intercourse with their white neighbors and the meetings that we have, statewide meetings of county officials, municipal officials, and in fact becoming part of the mainstream of American life. The way they did it with the Indian Reorganization Act and all the activities that flowed therefrom, we set the Indian aside as a problem, we treated him like a child, and he's going to act like a child.
Until you object to this tribal organization?
Absolutely. It's the aldermanic system of government. It was all right as long as we had these big, dumb, uneducated full-bloods who didn't have a bit of larceny in their hearts. The aldermanic system worked just fine. But now we're getting smart half-breeds with political ambitions that get on these councils, and they're raising havoc. Because, as you know, the aldermanic system is more prone to graft and corruption than probably any other type of government.
It seems to work that way.
That's the way it works. And it we haven't really seen it, because today I can see the emergence of a new bureaucracy among tribal leaders. And it's working in the same way that this governmental bureaucracy has worked on the Indians as a whole. And now these mixed bloods are getting in there, and they're taking all the cream, and only their relatives and friends benefit, and the rest of the Indian population gets no benefit whatsoever. In fact, you'll find that the great bulk of the Indian people in the outlying areas, through the entire history of government aid and paternalism to Indian people, has received little or no benefit from anything.
That seems to be the case, yeah.
In other words, they talk about a cattle program. And they go before Congress and they tell Congress how much good this is doing, when if you actually would take the proper statistics, a very small percentage of the Indian people have anything whatsoever to do with the cattle program, as little as maybe 1%.
Something like 90 cattle ranchers on Rosebud.
Yeah. But 90% of those are so small that you can't even hardly call them cattle operations. I mean, they got 50 head of yearlings. It takes an Indian operator 3 or 4 years before these cattle are big enough to produce to make him a living. So that it's robbing Peter to pay Paul, or whatever you want to say. He's just given enough so that the reports show a good report for Congress, with little or no concern for the Indian himself.
Do you think it's had the Indian Reorganization Act gave a form of self-government, a sort of a form? Did this do any good in training the Indians to have
no
self-government?
No, it's not self-government, because self-government by permission is no self-government at all. And everything that the Indian Reorganization Act brought in under the guise of self-government was subject to the approval or the concurrence of the Secretary of the Interior or his authorized representative, which was the superintendent. So that these Indians have never made policy decisions. They have never been able to use creative thinking. Everything they've done has been under the wing of the government. It's just like the rich kid with the rich father. Everything is planned for him. He never develops this mind of his.
Just going through the processes of elections and campaigns, has this been of any benefit, do you think? Or?
I don't think so, because it's been set apart. Now, if they had elections in the same manner as neighboring communities and neighboring counties, for the same kinds of officers, then the Indian would start to feel that he was a citizen of the country. But you see what you do when you set people aside like this. Everything's gimme, 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 with no assumption of responsibilities. And responsibilities of public officials are as important as the rights that you get from attaining these positions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something the Indian has never been taught.
And your solution would be to demolish the tribal organization and put them into a regular county system like anyone else in South Dakota?
Well, demolish the white man's idea of how the Indian should live and let him live like other people. Because he actually has the resources on these reservations in order to survive on a much grander scale of living than he's living now. Or I should say on a lot less poor standard rather than grander, because their condition and their standard of living is awful low now. But you see, these Indians have, well, what I call it is the right to fail. We don't have the right to fail. White people who are in successful business nowadays have had quite a few failures. But they've learned from these failures because their minds have been allowed to create, to learn by experience, to do it better the next time. With all these Indian programs, it's a one-shot deal. You get a chance, and if you fail, they go on and give it to somebody else, when they're really not giving either of them anything.
A lot of Indians leave the reservation.
There's no future there for the Indians under the present system.
How do they do off it? Now, obviously, you've done very well, but also you're rather an unusual...
Well, I don't know about that. I think that a great many Indians have done very well off the reservation, but you never hear about them because they've become a quiet voice among the population in general, and you never hear anything except from the radicals and the ones that are raising Cain and causing trouble. Like, for instance, in Rapid City, we probably have as many as 4,000 Indians, but there's a minority of about 200 that you hear about. And these are the drunks and the troublemakers and the agitators and the ones that that gravitate to Rapid City just to sow some wild oats and get drunk and raise hell and spend money. The quiet man that raises his family, that goes to work every day, that has a good job, you never hear anything about him. And there are many families like that in Rapid City. So I would say this, that we have a very small minority of Indian people who have gravitated into some of our larger towns off the reservation and who have learned to survive by not the most complimentary way of life possible. I mean, they've learned to lie and cheat and steal and rob drunks and everything else. This is a very small minority. We have many young Indian girls that are going into these towns, and they're nothing more than prostitutes, and they're a very small minority.
I'm sure of that.
But these girls, many times to accomplish their ends, I've run into situations where they have unjustly accused white and Indians alike of rape in some cases, and I've defended a couple of these people who were so accused, white people accused of raping Indian girls, when it was a question of... the guy probably not paying for it or not doing what he had promised to do in return for the favor that caused the rape charge to be brought in the first place. But this isn't the rule. This is the exception.